Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dr. Warren Farrell, author of The Boy Crisis, thank you so much for coming on today. I've read through some of the things that you sent me here, and I get the idea. But for our audience who has no idea who you are or what's going on, well, first, what kind of doctor are you?
I have a PhD.
Okay, and what do you, I guess my question, like, what do you specialize in?
For the last 50 years or so, I have specialized in male-female relations. I just keep it to those two things. I'm engaged in the hopeless activity of trying to get men and women to understand each other.
Oh boy! So you've been to
it's at least full time employment.
Yeah, right. You've been to Venus and Mars. I take it
exactly right.
All right, great. And your book, The Boy Crisis. What's this all about?
I and John Gray, you said Venus and Mars, and John Gray obviously is the author of the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and he's the co-author of The Boy Crisis. And so I started this looking at this when one of my past books, a book called The Myth of Male Power, was translated into other languages, and I started traveling around the country, the world, and hearing from one country after the other that, you know, our girls are actually doing pretty well, but, you know, my son is having a lot of problems. And so I started to look into that and found that in the 60 largest developed nations, our boys were falling behind girls in every single academic subject. And so I started asking myself, what is there about developed nations that is making this happen? And I found that it was happening with two groups of people, boys and girls who were children of divorce, who, when they got divorced, had very minimal or no father involvement, and boys and girls who were the sons and daughters of mothers who were single moms who never had a father involved or had a father involved, but the father was involved for a few years, and then she was never married to begin with, and that lack of bond created a disconnect between the father and the mother, and the children were basically left without a father. And so I started looking at that more closely and started asking myself, well, what is it, you know, what exactly is the damage that is done when there isn't a lot of father involvement? And was able to identify and document more than 70 different areas, ways that children suffer from being much more likely to be depressed, to being more likely to commit suicide, to being more likely to drop out of school, to being more likely to be delinquents, to commit crimes, and you know, join ISIS. And it was really just astonishing. More likely to rape out of anger. Every nightmare that a parent has was so much more likely to happen when a child didn't have a significant amount of father involvement. And so then I began to investigate and ask why that was the case, and, you know, what was there about what dads do that's different from what moms do that allow them to be so much more effective as parents when the two parents work together, as opposed to one being out of the picture.
Okay, and to your point, my question is, it's the boy crisis, but let's say you have maybe a daughter with, you know, a fatherless family or something like that. Are girls affected the same way?
They are affected the same way, some different ways, but not to the degree that our sons are affected. So, for example, even the Department of Housing and Urban Development was very concerned about people being involved in poor areas and feeling that was a huge detriment to the poverty, and the poor school systems were a huge detriment to the children. So they took 17,000 families and they subsidized them to move to better neighborhoods with better schools. The girls did significantly better. the boys did worse. They were so depressed about losing their old friends, and they didn't have this, as good emotional skills to develop new friends, and so they went downhill. The girls went uphill, and this is sort of a metaphor. In just pure scientific terms, this is really amazing. What I'm going to be saying here now is telomeres, which are the parts of your cells that if they don't reproduce well, the telomeres don't reproduce well, genes that are the cure for cancer or the cure for heart disease do not get reproduced. So the shorter your telomeres, the shorter your life expectancy is by the age of 9. Well, by the age of 9, children who have minimal or no father involvement have 14% shorter telomeres, meaning predicting a 14% shorter life expectancy. But there's a male-female difference. The male telomeres, the boys' telomeres at the age of 9, are 40% shorter than the girls' telomeres are at the age of 9, giving you some amazing insight into how the impact of a lack of father involvement is on both girls and boys, but the greater impact that it is on boys. Because, and just common sense wise, a girl without father involvement still has her mother as a role model as to how to be a female, whereas the boy without father involvement does not have that role model. So both hurt significantly. Girls hurt particularly in the area of their relationships with boys. They're far more likely to have sex much more quickly because they don't have enough nuanced understanding of how to be able to keep a boy, except to know to be able to be sexual with him. Or conversely, they're so afraid of connection with boys that they can't be either involved intimacy-wise in terms of psychological intimacy, and they also can't be involved sexually. And so the girls who don't have father involvement tend to err on both extremes, being very sexual too quickly or not sexual or intimate soon enough because they're uncomfortable and they don't know enough about boys to know how to create a good connection.
So biologically, a full family is really important, I guess, to boys and girls. I mean, I guess the big question I had, reading through this, and you speak about marriage and keeping the family together and just working things out. I think one of the things you said here was about it's not, people don't get divorced over bills and things like that. They get divorced because they don't talk to each other about these things.
Yes, exactly. People do not get divorced over money and sex and things like that. They get divorced over their inability to communicate about money and sex. And so if we really want to change the boy crisis, and one of the things that would be really helpful is to start communication classes in first, second, and third grade, and to also train parents to know how to communicate. And the single biggest Achilles heel of all human beings is our inability to handle personal criticism from our loved ones without becoming defensive. Especially if that personal criticism is given badly, and almost always anyone thinks that any criticism given by their loved one is given badly. So we need to, really focus on being able to alter our psychological receptivity to criticism, and that's I teach courses in that all around the country, and it's extremely hard to do. It takes me a good 10, 12 hours of workshop work with couples to teach them how to alter their way of being able to hear criticism. But if you can't hear, if you aren't able to communicate about the tough problems between the two of you, then the father thinks that he has the best answer to the problem, the mother thinks she has the best answer, and the two of them think that they're bad parents because the father feels the mother, let's say, is overprotective, and the mother feels that the father is roughhousing, and she feels like when he's roughhousing, she just has one more child to monitor, and the father doesn't know that when he roughhouses, he doesn't do his homework, he doesn't read books, like whether it's The Boy Crisis or any other book on parenting, he doesn't read those books and find out what is there about roughhousing that leads my children to know when it goes too far, when it doesn't, what's the difference between being assertive and being aggressive, and what is the... He doesn't explain to mom that when I roughhouse with a child, that creates a bond, and that bond I'm able to use as leverage to enforce boundaries. I'm able to say, no more roughhousing until you finish all your homework and you brush your teeth and get everything ready for bed and do your chores. And the child is so desirous of getting back and roughhousing again and having or playing or having daddy read a nice story to him before bedtime that she or he focuses on the work that they need to do in order to get what they want, the roughhousing. And that teaches the child postpone gratification, to do what you need to do before you get what you want. And without postpone gratification is the single biggest ingredient to becoming successful. Without postpone gratification, the child that goes into school doesn't do his homework well because they're distracted by text or distracted by a new video game opportunity. And then they start feeling ashamed of themselves because they don't do their work well. They're not standing out as well as other students. That shame begins to lead to withdrawal into things like video games or porn, and the child starts to feel more and more depressed and negative about himself and his ability to have real life relationships.
So this is a cycle that it could start basically with the parents communicating to each other. Would you say is it more important to have constructive criticism, or is it more important to be able to take criticism?
It's a really good question. I'd say the biggest Achilles heel is our inability to handle personal criticism. Criticism is a very tricky thing. The person giving criticism almost never sees herself or himself as criticizing. They see themselves as making a suggestion to improve the situation or the relationship. Any person hearing any suggestion for a change in attitude or a change in behavior perceives herself or himself as being criticized. And so, people will often say, gee, I feel you're always criticizing me. And the other person says, what do you mean? I'm not criticizing you at all. I'm just making a suggestion for improvement. But the person who receives those suggestions, you come home from shopping and you get 40 different items, and somebody says to you, your partner says to you, oh, you should have gotten us a quart of milk rather than the half gallon. We can't fit the half gallon in the refrigerator so easily. And so the person coming home feels like, gee, and now the person making that suggestion feels they're just making a good suggestion for a more efficient refrigerator. The other person feels I've gotten 40 items. The only one that you make any comment about is the one that's the wrong one. That doesn't feel like a real great incentive to do more shopping.
Oh, I've actually been there. She got a half gallon of milk, and I was like, why don't you just get a gallon? And it went downhill from there, kind of like you're saying.
Yeah,
and I didn't mean anything by it. It was just like, I don't want to have to go out and buy another half gallon of milk later. That was it. What I mean? It's not, and maybe this is a subject for a new book for you, but politically, I see a lot of that. People, when they talk about, and we don't even have to talk about this if you don't want to, but the president, when people bring him up, you have one side that would say, like, it's almost like they're criticizing, but they think that they're trying to make a way for it to be better. But then you have the other side that hears, like, the criticism, and that's all they hear. So they think that you're just thinking negatively. But somewhere in the middle, is people with good intentions. It's just that we kind of, I feel like both sides are deaf to that.
Absolutely, and we certainly see that deafness in this culture today. The probably as divided as it's been for maybe since the Civil War, this has really been the inability to hear people is very natural. It's biologically natural. Falling in love is biologically natural. Sustaining love is biologically unnatural, and one of the ways that it's unnatural is that when we make suggestions for improvement, it's biologically natural to interpret those as criticism. And that's because historically speaking and biologically speaking, if you had a kinship network or a tribe and you heard criticism about yourself from another tribe, if you wanted to survive, you perceived that that might be an enemy, so you got up your defenses, and you tried, or you killed the criticizer before the criticizer killed you, and that was a method of survival. But today, if you if your partner is makes a suggestion and you sort of kill your partner before your partner kills you because you feel that that suggestion is a criticism that's going to emotionally kill you, then that becomes a way of not allowing your partner to feel safe for sharing what she or he needs to share in order to make a better relationship. And so so because it's biologically unnatural, the training that I do in my workshops is to get people to only share their major concerns during a short period of time during the week. The rest of the week is a conflict-free zone, and then during that short period of time, they focus on hearing what their partner needs to say. And but before they do that, they alter their psychological state by doing a series of meditations that connect them to their partner's love. And so that allows their partner to, the person receiving the criticism, to hear it much more openly. But that type of unnatural work needs to be done in order to do something that is, it's biologically natural to become defensive. It just is not constructive. But anyway, all of those things, the lack of that good communication leads to the divorces, and the divorces lead to the lack of father involvement. And so a huge amount needs to be done to compensate for that. The schools need to be getting more fathers and more men involved as teachers. We need to be getting more vocational education in schools and more recess in schools. So there's so much that needs to be done because when children go from a mother-only family to a female-dominated school system with a feminization of education, that combination doesn't leave the male with any type of support system as to how to channel his testosterone constructively. And when boys don't learn to channel their testosterone constructively, they tend to channel it destructively. So hence, almost every member of ISIS is a child without significant father involvement. And almost all your school shooters and your mass shooters, they're highly likely to have a significant lack of father involvement.
Yeah, I see here. You list a lot of the shootings where people are fatherless. But one of the questions I had reading through all this, and someone actually texts in and they mention same-sex couples. Did you do any research, or do you know anything about two father households or two mother households and how that affects the child?
We're still in the nascent stages of research on that. A lot of research says gay parents do really well. A lot of research says gay parents do not do really well. And when you look at the research, usually it's from a gay advocacy group where they find that the parents do really well, and from some anti-gay marriage group that you find the other data. But we don't have enough long-term data. What we do know is that as a rule, parents that that go against the norm, that highly self-select each other, whether they're single fathers, for example, the children do extremely well with single fathers. When the single father is married and the mother is, when I said single fathers, I should have said, when fathers bring up children predominantly, the children do well as long as they're married and the mother stays connected to the children, which mothers almost always do. In gay families, we don't have good long-term data because there haven't been a lot of stable gay families that have raised children that have grown up to be adults that we've been able to see the pattern of and where we have had large enough numbers to control for socioeconomic variables and other things that might cause a difference. However, what we do know is that in all populations where there are people who are self-selected, like gay parents are self-selected, they're highly motivated, and so they're usually going to be very focused on their children and very conscious of their parenting. And so there's a good chance that the children will probably probably have a more positive experience because of that self-selection and high motivation.
That's so interesting. And, the way I tied this into the show today is I was doing a show about graduating and advice for graduates and what happens after, school or college or whatever. How does this, and maybe you already kind of hit on it, how does this particular, the boy crisis, affect like graduation rates and success later on in life?
Yes, if you're a graduate, then the chances are fairly good that you're already on your way. If you're selecting a partner, and I'd say here are some things to watch out for. Ask yourself, what is my personality? Am I a personality who, when I get married, I want to be, if I'm a guy, I want to be a full-time dad. And if I do want to be a full-time dad, you've got to make sure that the woman that you select is a woman who can really respect a full-time father, and she would maybe have an aspiration to be what she would call a have-it-all woman, a woman who has a powerful career, but wants to have a good marriage and wants to have children that are well-raised. Well, she can do that, but she can do that only if you, as a guy, are desirous of being what I call a father warrior, that is a father who really wants to overcome the barriers of discrimination that the society has against a full-time father and be involved as a full-time father. You probably read in the Boy Crisis book my story with my John Lennon coming up to me and saying that he joined a men's group that I formed, and that men's group led him to making a decision to be fully involved with his new son Sean, and that led to him taking off work for 5 years to be a full-time dad. And I asked him, was that a good decision for you? At this point in time, Sean was only 2 years old, and he said, it was the best decision of my life. And so, very powerful people, men with very good careers, when they do put their time into their children, they find it is the most rewarding experience that they've ever had. And so the graduate from high school who's a male needs to ask himself that question: is that what I want to do? Does that tap into my personality? But if that does, there are many women who won't respect me if I don't earn as much money as they do, and they won't even marry me or want to have children with me. So you've got to select the right woman for that. And I sort of talk in the Boy Crisis book about how to go about selecting the right woman for that. And conversely, with a woman, you've got to ask yourself the question: am I a woman who wants to be home full time with the children? That's one thing. But if you're a woman who wants to break a glass ceiling and do very well in your career, yet you also want to be married and have children and have them raised well, the solution is not to be a single mom. That puts a huge amount of stress on you. The children are far more likely to grow up being disobedient, non-productive, talking back. You'll be more likely to feel overwhelmed and stressed and juggled, and you will not have the satisfaction, chances are, of well-raised children. Now, there are single mothers work extremely hard, probably harder than almost any other subpopulation group, and some children of single mothers do very well, but that's the exception rather than the rule, and you're taking a big risk.
So there's a lot going on. It's almost like we have science and biology, and all these things are competing. I'm going to leave it there because I have to take a break. But if everybody wants to get your book or maybe your seminar, how can we contact you or find these things?
Yes, the Boy Crisis book, just go on Amazon. They really have a very good price for it there. Or if you're interested in learning more about the couples communication that I was talking about, go on warrenferrell.com. That's Warren. Farrell is F as in Frank, Arrell, warrenferrell.com.
Perfect. Well, Dr. Warren Farrell, author of The Boy Crisis, thank you so much for coming on today.
It's a real pleasure. It's nice to connect with you.
No, thanks.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.